Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome, friends, to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. This is Steve Fielder with you one more time, coming to you from the world headquarters of the Gone to the Dogs podcast, Inc., on the west central coast of Florida, about 2 miles from the Gulf. And I have not one, not two, but three of the coon hunting sport's most famous and most recognizable personalities, and I'm just so thankful to get them all together in one bunch here. And I've got them all huddled up there in Ohio. I guess you boys are. You in Ohio tonight?
Yep, up here in central Ohio.
In central Ohio. Well, that voice you heard was Colton Coon Man Dunlap. Colton is the younger, he's the son of Chuck Dunlap, and then Chuck is the brother of Don Dunlap, and I've got all three of them here. How are you fellas doing tonight?
Doing good, Steve.
Yeah, really, really doing well.
Happy to be here and talking with you.
Oh, man, I tell you what, I've seen some big old smiles on that voice's face right there, Don Dunlap, back in 2005, and then again in 2008, I believe, when you won the AKC World Championship with Mr. Smith. Do you remember that, Don?
Yeah, I remember it.
Oh, that's great. We want to talk about that. We want to talk about Smith, and I want to talk about with Chuck about that English dog that he used to be so well known for, the Loomis dog. And I remember those early pictures, Chuck, of you and Loomis. You were quite, you looked like the professor. You looked like Clark Kent with those glasses on and all buttoned down and slipped up and all that. Sure. And, yeah, those were great, great times. Now, I got to give you guys special treatment because your roots go back to the same state that I do, and that's West Virginia, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Fayette County.
Where?
Fayette County.
Fayette County. Well, that's just the next door county to me. I was born and raised in Raleigh County.
Raleigh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't, you know, I guess until I till Colton and I were messaging each other on Facebook, that I didn't realize that you guys were originally from West Virginia. What town there in Fayette?
Well, Montgomery is where we were born.
Okay, down on the river, Kanawha River there.
Yeah, right. Clintage. And me and my brother John that has passed away. Moved up here with mom and dad, and she went back. So my brother Don and Sean could be delivered by Dr. Peck. And his dad was also a doctor, and he coon hunted with a couple of my uncles.
Well, I had a dentist named Dr. Peck there in Beckley when I was a kid. That's interesting. I used to go down.
Wouldn't that be something that they were related?
Well, it could be very well, you know.
Very close.
I'm hitting my Mickey Mouse watch here on my arm. Mickey wanted to join the conversation. No, I get to rambling, you know. I jump on my horse and ride off in all directions. So you boys will have to get me, you know, reined in here. But I used to go through Deepwater and Montgomery down that way. Those names sound familiar to you?
Oh, yeah. Smithers, Deepwater.
Yeah.
On the other side of the river was Powhatan.
Bell was kind of in that area, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on the same side of the river as Smithers was.
Yeah.
Bell was, but that's right after you get out of Charleston, you hit Bell and then get on 60, and it takes you to Smithers. And
If you stay right on 60, you'll go to Rainell you know, through Hawk's Nest and all that stuff.
Me and Leon Childers was going to Virginia one time, and we took that route.
Oh, boy.
Just to do it.
Crooked as a dog's leg, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it is. But beautiful.
It is beautiful, for sure. I was through there a couple of years ago. I'd been up to Randy Smith's in Pennsylvania and didn't realize I was coming back through down 79 on or that Corridor L, they called it, across the big bridge, and it was bridge day. And that's the day they close off the bridge and let people walk and jump off of it with bungee cords and all. So we had to go all the way around through some of those places we were talking about there to bypass that. Yeah.
My daughter and I went down there and walked under the bridge.
You did.
Put a harness on. And you walk on a little catwalk.
Yeah, that's pretty hairy, isn't it?
Yeah, I really liked it. It looked like ants down there. When you see people, it looked like ants.
I heard old Bubba, that old boy from West Virginia, told me he took a flight somewhere, and he told the boy, they said, got on the plane, sat down by this old boy, and he said, "Boy, look down there, man, them people look just like ants." And the old guy said, "They are ants. We haven't taken off yet." Oh, boy, that's enough dad jokes for me now, boys.
Hey, Steve, you've been around all over, lived in several different places. The people in West Virginia is a lot friendlier than most people that you run into.
That's for sure, Don. For sure. And, you know, I love my home state. I see things on Facebook coming out of my town there in Beckley. It's kind of turned for the worse. Right. They've got drug problems and all kinds of problems now. But it was a wonderful place to grow up as a kid. But for everything but coon hunting. And the coon hunting really was bad. Did you do any coon hunting there in Fayette County?
Well, I have went back and done it. But I never did it when I was a kid. We left there. I was 5 years old when we left there, and we went back a lot because my grandma and grandpa was still alive.
Yeah.
But I did go back down and around Oak Hill. Me and Colton went hunting down there, and we treat several coons.
Well, you know, the coons have kind of made a comeback. I don't know whether they were ever there. We used to have to buy them and bring them in there and stock them, we called it, you know, and turn them loose and all. But coons were fairly scarce. But I hunted around those old strip jobs and up around above New River there, you know, the years before I went to UKC. But yeah, well, we used to joke around back home and say in school we studied the three R's, reading, writing, and Route 21 to Cleveland. And now, where in Ohio did you go? Did the family go?
It's between Newark and Zanesville. Okay. When we first come up here, we lived in town in Newark. And then we moved out in the country.
Okay. Well, it is hilly around there, but you've got good coon hunting.
Where I live on a road called Frampton Road, and it looks like little West Virginia.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Hemlocks.
Oh, yeah.
Big rocks coming out of the side of the hill and stuff.
Oh,
but we've got a good coon population.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, I was over there for some hunt at Newark, and I can't remember what it was. It might have been some kind of plot hunt, or it may have been after I went to PKC.
It probably was. We had the plot a sectional, or not a plot sectional, plot days. PKC plot days.
Yeah. Okay, that's what it would have been then, I'm sure. But, well, that's great. It's always good to reminisce from folks back home, you know. I keep a little West Virginia, a little silver thing on each of my vehicles down here. And people pull up beside me, you know, where are you from? You know, we'll talk out the window there. Oh, I'm from Charleston. I'm from Morgantown. I'm from this and that, you know. But, yeah, it's always good to talk to folks from back home, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know exactly where to start here, but I know when I listened to Clayton podcast, Stark, Colton, they kind of put you in the background. They didn't let you talk much until right at the end.
we'll let him talk.
Yeah.
So okay, let's set the table here. Chuck, you've been coon hunting since you were a kid. How old were you when you started?
I was 12 years old when I trained the first dog that would run and tree a coon.
Well, you've asked me my age, and I'm going to ask you yours.
Yeah, now. I'll be 62 Valentine's Day.
Okay, so 12 and 60, you know, that's about 50 years, Bubba.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's a good period of time for sure. Okay. Well, when you came up to Ohio, if I recall the story right, you got involved some with coon hunting. You had a blue tick.
I had a Bert Noni give me a little English female pup, and I made her into a coon dog. And the next coon dog I had was a blue tick. He was went back to Doc's Blue Hustler.
Doc Householder.
He was a nice dog.
He was a real coon dog, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, a good one. Tight made and could tree the coons.
Well, Doc had some good dogs. I remember one time, here's another story, I'll try to be brief. I was a field rep for UKC starting in 1978. So I had to work the RQEs. And one of them I had to work was up there in Ohio, somewhere in that general area. And we had a question come in, and I think I had every one of Doc's handlers in front of the desk on me at one time. It was like a yellow jacket nest.
was Lawrence Goings there?
I imagine.
That's our buddy.
Is he your buddy?
Yeah, he's a good one.
Apparently I was there. I think he's gone back home now, though, but you had old John Walkup up in that area there, didn't you?
Yeah, he lives down Beckley now.
Oh, he's in Beckley. He's back in my old stomping ground. Yeah. I thought he was up on Elk River up there somewhere there at one time.
No, I believe he's right around Beckley.
Oh, is he? Okay.
I just talked to him at a hunt. I just talked to him at last year at the Tournament of Championships. Yeah. Me and him sat down and had a long talk.
Well, my listeners, if they've been under a rock, they won't know probably who John was, but he won the PKC World Hunt in 1999 with old Buckeye Bud. I remember that. John couldn't say a word. All he could do was sit there and grin that night after. Well, okay, so Chuck, you're older than Don, right?
Yeah.
How much different?
3 years.
Okay. All right. So and then, Chuck, you are the father of Colton. We said we were going to let Colton talk.
Yeah.
And thanks to him by giving me a little bump and telling me that he enjoyed the podcast, which I really appreciate, Colton. You know, we got to this point where we're able to get together, and I really thank you for that. But
5 minutes, Steve. I really enjoyed listening to him.
Well, that's good. That's good. And when I listen to you on the podcast, now you've done probably more than just the one with Clayton, haven't you? Or have you?
Yeah, me and Dad got together with Mason Bush with University, and then we sat down with Michaelis as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I know I listened to you before on one of those, and I can't remember which one, if it was with Josh or with Mason. But some of these guys, they ain't tough like I am, Chuck and Don. I've been doing this since 2019, and a lot of those boys that got in this podcast game have give up on me. You know, they fell out of the race. But I guess I'm just too stubborn to quit, and I'm too old to do anything else. So. Well, let's go. What, Colton, how was it growing up in a family of coon hunters? And I've heard you say early on that Dad was kind of not rough on you, but it was kind of hard to hang with him out there.
Yes, Steve, it didn't come anywhere from him being malicious or not wanting me to go with him. He was just a very intense, hard hunter, and he didn't turn it off when I went with him. And whenever you're 4 and 5 years old, it's hard to keep up. But I'll tell you, my dad is always made me priority. And if he'd coon hunt all night and take me deer hunting the next morning, you know, we were going to do something together.
Well, it must be in the water or something there in West Virginia, because my dad was the very same way. You know, I was just kind of his shadow. Whatever Dad was doing, that's what I wanted to be doing too, you know. And so you're very, very blessed in that regard, Colton.
Absolutely.
And Chuck, I can't begin to tell you, but I know you know that you are very blessed to have a son that enjoys the sport.
Oh, yeah. It's been a blessing to me.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Don, do you have children?
Yes, I do. I have three.
Okay.
I have a daughter and Dylan, and then Wyatt, two boys and a girl.
Okay.
I have a girl too.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Named after my mom, Grace Ella is her name.
Grace what?
Grace Ella is her name.
My wife's first name is Ella.
This is Grace Ella.
Yeah. It's all one word.
Together. One word, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. All right. Well, my wife and I went to high school together and were sweethearts, as they say. And then we went our separate ways and didn't see each other for 35 years and got back together. But she's a West Virginia girl. And
well, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really has been. But my son coon hunted with me coming up there in Michigan, raised him in Michigan. We were 4 years old. He was 4 years old when I went to UKC. But he loved it then. But then other things got his attention. He played sports and things like that. And he loved the dogs, but just never did get the coon hunting bug, you know, like I had all my life.
Well, you know, it takes a special person. I used to hunt with some high school football players. And they said, hey, we ought to bring all the football players out here and work out, go coon hunting. He said, because you put out more than what we do on the field.
Oh, boy, ain't that the truth, man. I've never been as tired in my life as I have been sometimes. I don't want to hog this conversation, but I got to tell you this one little quick one. I had a heart attack in 2006. I was working for the AKC in Raleigh. I was out on a night hunt, started having chest pains, had to go in, got an ambulance ride. They told me I needed bypass surgery at Duke. So I did. I had it, and it all went well. And afterwards, in the follow-up, when I'd go back to the doctor, they'd put me on a treadmill. And man, the doctor said, man, you're doing great. You're really tearing that thing up. What do you do for exercise? And I said, well, I just go out here to Jordan Lake and turn a couple coon dogs loose and try to get them gathered back up by daylight. And he said, well, tell me more about it. Yeah, you can get tired out there. Colton, do you remember when you were little going with your dad
You bet, Steve. He actually would pack me on his shoulders when I was real little, and he'd take me. I was his shadow, Steve. Like you said, I followed him everywhere, and he was glad to take me. And I can still remember just being little and being up on his shoulders, heading to a dog. And that's a mark of a pretty tough man to be able to pack a kid like that through these hills.
Well, it is, especially in hilly terrain and all of that.
Yes.
How old were you, Don, when you started? Did you start out hunting with Chuck or your brother?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. We was young, real young.
He's probably 10.
Yeah, I was 10 years old when I started.
Yeah.
Hunting. And the biggest hunt, the first big hunt I ever won was the Futurity they had at Jonesboro, Illinois. I won it with a blue tick dog that belonged to Greg Holbrook, dog called Banded Sam.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to PKC in 1998. That's when I left UKC, and the first hunt that I worked at PKC was the national championship in Flora. But I remember you boys were hunting. You were all already hunting PKC at that time, weren't you?
Right.
98?
Yeah. Yeah, we've hunted.
Yeah, I started hunting it when it was PCA.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, Murray Reagan, I don't know if you know Murray. He's out in Tennessee.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. He asked me the other day if I knew when and where the first PCA hunt was. I think PCA started in 1973. It seems to me that's the date, but I have no idea where they held the first hunt.
I remember that Homer Hutchison won one, and I don't know the date of it. But he won it with an English male dog, and I cannot remember his name. But it was back in the late 70s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Homer was a dandy, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's still alive.
Oh, is he? Oh,
yes.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah, we had some fun times with Homer. We had speaking of plot dogs there earlier, the year the plot won the UKC World Hunt was there at Mount Vernon.
And Sizzler Pete. Sizzling heat,
yeah. And Homer, what a character he was. That was the year we had that boy out of Georgia to come back. He was going to whip Homer. Do you remember that?
Now, you know, I don't believe I was up there. I'd sold a dog that was qualified, and I didn't hunt it.
Yeah. That old boy, I don't know, he had gone out and got into the spirits a little bit and come back in and thinking about what had happened on a cast earlier in the week. And, oh, we had a little ballyhoo, and that guy got to spend a couple weeks up there in the as a guest of the county.
I see.
But those what they call the good old days, Colton. Nothing like that ever happens nowadays, thank God.
Yeah.
Unless Norm's at the hunt, maybe. But.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great memories. I know I'm bouncing around here, guys, but Chuck.
It's all right.
Well, that's what this thing is. It's just a group of guys getting together, talking dogs, and having a good time. That's what this podcast has always been. And this one right here, Gone to the Dogs, is now in its, I think, about 212th or 13th episode. And before that, I had one with Chris Powell we called Houndsman XP, and then later on one we called Nightlife Nation. And all together has been over, I think, 330 of them all together. But it's just been a blessing to me to be able to get together, you know, with guys like you and talk dogs and talk things that mean the most to us. Well, Colton, I'm going to go to your dad here just a minute and ask him about this Loomis dog. Now, Loomis was one of the most famous English dogs that I knew of back in the day.
Well, he's still to this day the best dog that I ever put a snap on. I never owned him. I just hunted him and handled him. And he was quick as lightning, accurate. He wasn't what I'd call a strike dog, but back then he got a lot of first strikes just on his hunt. And you could send him across a wide open field and he'd be to that woods in no time and have a coon treat. And he operated like that every time you unsnapped him.
Well, now, as I remember looking at Loomis, he was kind of an open-ticked blue dog, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't...
He had a blue cast to him, kind of white underneath it,
right?
And then he had red tick legs and a red head. I raised for years. I raised pups off of him. I was back to in the fourth generation of some of them that I've raised, and I ended up selling them all out to Wyatt Wright when he bought Rooster.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that then, but yeah, I noticed on the Clayton Stark podcast, he mentioned Rooster and, you know, of course, Michigan Swamp Rooster. I remember him well.
An older fellow that lived over here by me bred one of my females that I'd raised to him and got a couple good pups. And he ended up buying one of them off of me, a little Jip I called Kinley. And then he bought another one that we had. And then he ended up getting all the bitches that I had.
He bought Bird.
What was her? I can't remember what that lady. He bought Kate. He bought
Bat.
A little bitch I had called Bat.
Okay, now was Loomis a single registered dog or was he?
No, he wasn't. Purple. He was litter registered, but his dad and mother. His mother was litter registered English, but she went back to House's chief.
Okay.
And a bitch called Dowden Lane Bluebell that was out of Hester's Blue Buck.
I remember
and
that name.
On his top side, he was went back to Merchant's Bounce. His daddy was off of Merchant's Bounce. He was a full walker dog, but they breed transferred him.
Oh, okay.
That was back when you could breed transfer.
Yeah, like Hard Time Spec.
They called him Crazy George is what they called him, but now his kennel name was Bowles' Johnny Reb.
Okay, I got you. I got you. Well, Loomis, good mouth?
No, I wouldn't call it. I'd call it a good bitch mouth. It was a high Pearson type chop mouth that you could hear forever. I mean, you could hear him with so-called big mouth dog. If he was on the other side of him, you could hear him.
Well, I learned that years ago bear hunting with my dad, that those high-pitched mouths carry.
They're what I love. Mm-hmm. I love that high-pitched mouth.
Yeah, for sure. Well, okay, so what were the years there that you hunted Loomis?
Loomis? Oh, Lordy.
82?
Yeah, 82. 82 and 83. I hunted him all of 82 and all of 83, and then I started raising dogs off of him myself, and that was it. I thought I'd be with them my whole life, and I didn't. I actually sold myself out of business.
Well, I see where Ike Graney's doing that down here in Florida right now. He's selling out, it looks like. Got a lot of dogs for sale. Okay, well, 83 was in January, was my first experience being the manager at UKC. I came up there in January of 83, so. But I guess I knew you, Chuck, and seen you and your pictures and with Loomis and the ads and all that stuff. Didn't know too much about Don until I went to
Pete. Well, I was just 18. I was 18 then. He would have been a lot younger. But now he come on the scene right after that. And, you know, I've always said about him that he is he's more like a type of person that he don't beat you by rules. He can listen to a dog, and he knows every dog out there, and he knows what you're doing, and he don't make a lot of mistakes. He don't.
Yeah. Well, that's what we try to tell. We've got a boy hunting a dog. He took him as a partner on a young dog there in North Carolina, and he's just, oh, man, he is so excited about getting into the night hunts and all that. He's not young, but he's young in coon hunting. He's about 40. And just tell him, and you got to learn the dogs, you know, just listen. And he's been a dog man. He was a hog hunter. But listen to those dogs and learn those rules, you know. I think that's probably. Did your dad give you any kind of instruction like that, Colton, when you started?
Oh, yes. You know, Steve, talking about that, learning the dogs, that's, I don't want to say it's a lost art, but it kind of is with these Garmins nowadays. You know, you cut loose on a cast nowadays, everybody's looking at that screen. And when I was young and first started hunting, that there was no distractions, no looking at a Garmin. You was listening to the dog, and that's the way I was brought up with Dad, you know.
Sure. Well, you make an excellent point, and I know my buddies used to come up every year from Virginia and hunt with me in Michigan. And of course, you know, they'd be standing around talking, laughing, joking, all this. And man, I know they thought I was being pretty unsociable, you know, or antisocial, but
people say that about me. They do. I mean, I want to listen to what's going on out there.
Absolutely.
We'll talk later.
Exactly. I had always sidle out there and find me a tree to sneak off behind where I could hear my dog. That's what it's all about, isn't it? When we boil it all down, it's listening
you
to
bet.
Those dogs.
You bet. Hey, Steve, back when he was hunting Loomis, we had a training school, too. We worked dogs for the public. And
I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead,
one time, one time we was hunting the dogs out here off of a place called Ridgely Track up a creek, and we had the training dogs, and it was season, and it come up a bad storm, and they wasn't doing too good. Well, we went home and got Loomis and got his half-sister, a bitch called Long Tall Sally,
And we come back in there and we treat 13 coons, and it was like a blizzard, but we treat 13 coons.
My goodness. And woods that dogs had already worked over.
Yeah, they wasn't doing too good. We seen a couple coons setting up, and they wasn't pleasing us, and we said, let's take them home and let them rest for a little while.
Yeah. Did Chuck's impatience have anything to do with that?
I think he's the one that mentioned.
Well, no, we're not going to call you impatient, Chuck. We're going to call you intense. I think Colton already used that term.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a good quality in a man. I have my friend has become a good friend to me since 2016, Randy Smith in Pennsylvania, is very, very intense when it comes to his dogs. And I successful people are that way.
Right. You have to be. If you don't take something serious, then you might as well get out of it.
Yep. That's for sure. For sure. You mentioned the training school, and I had kind of a thought, I tend to have strange thoughts at times. When you were training dogs like that, I think you said maybe you did it for a couple years or was
it? We did it probably 4 years.
4 years? Okay.
You couldn't do it now. There's no way what we did you could do. And we was charging more. At that time, we was charging $250 a month, and that was unheard. Now, that sounds like a little bit of nothing. But back then it wasn't.
That's pretty good money, yeah.
And sure. It's the territory we had to hunt. We had enough territory that it would support that. Well, you couldn't do it now. And me and him would take, he'd take three and I'd take three.
Yeah.
And that was $750 a month and we could live on it.
Sure. Yeah, that's sure. Well, here's the question for both of you. And I don't, were you involved in any of that, Colton, or were you too young for that?
No,
but I did hunt. I did hunt and train dogs for people through high school.
Yeah, and he got $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Well, you can join in on this too. Then on my question, what was the biggest thing, or the most important thing, or whatever you learned? All three of you individually, however, about coon hunting through training dogs for the public. What did you learn?
Well, Steve, I'll say my piece because I probably got the least amount of experience with it. But I'll tell you, the biggest thing that I learned is sometimes people, I always thought whenever you approach somebody with the truth, you know, I'm liable to get a dog, and in the first 2 weeks, always raised to be honest, tell this person, hey, look, you're, and just to be blunt about it, you're wasting your money on this one. You know, instead of just collecting my check and, you know, making up a bunch of fairy tales about what the dog did, you know, hey, this one here, I don't believe is going to cut it, you know, for it. And you learn that some people don't appreciate that like you would think.
You would think they would absolutely be grateful for that, wouldn't you?
Right. Right, but it would make some people sour. Now that didn't happen to me with everyone that I did, but I've have had it happen to me. That never made me change from telling the truth, you know. But,
yeah.
That was a big shock to me, you know.
Yeah. Well, as I've gotten older and the way that I was working and so forth, I did not have the time to put into. Now I coon hunted just about every night when I was in Michigan, but I had good coon hunting all around me. You know, I didn't have to go 10 minutes, 15 minutes from the house, and I was treeing coons, you know. But I've used training pens and trainers in the past, and they're not always truthful with you.
Right.
You know. What did Don, what about you? Did you pick up anything during those training years?
Oh, just like Colton said, they don't, most of them, not all of them, but I'm hunting dogs for the public right now. I had a guy bring a dog up here. I won't mention their names, but he wanted me to hunt with it, before I took it, and we went hunting, and I told him, I said, buddy, I can't do you no good on that dog. And he thanked me instead of giving me the $1,000. You know, I thought I'd go ahead and keep that because, you know, I knew I couldn't do nothing with her, or was pretty sure I couldn't. And it's nothing but a headache hunting a dog that is no good, you know.
Yeah, well, from my standpoint, I think you guys all will agree dogs need to be hunted. And that's probably what the short thing about most all dogs, they just are not getting hunted enough.
They don't get put in the woods enough to develop what they have.
Right.
And that's all you do. You're not a trainer and you're not a miracle worker. You develop what they was born with.
Well, exactly. And I think that's something that we lose sight of sometimes. And, you know, we expect these trainers to put more tree in him, take a less babble out of him, take a...
That happened when that egg met the sperm, and you can't do no more than what they're capable of doing.
Right.
I was talking to Ronnie Bone yesterday, and he said...
Oh, yeah.
He said what little bit of winning that he done, the reason he won was his dog was always in better shape than anybody's on the ground. You know, it could tree a coon at 7 o'clock, or it could tree one at 4 o'clock in the morning. And a lot of the dogs don't get that late night hunting, and you know they're not prepared for that. Chuck always hunted and hunted hard, and I did too. When I had a dog, it was that I knew could win. I'd do everything I could to have it in the best shape, you know, ever.
Well, you mentioned Ronnie Bone, and of course, when I was in PKC, he was very active. And just to illustrate what you said, we were at Cesar, Illinois. I believe it was Walker Days, PKC Walker Days, I'm thinking. But anyway, everybody's standing around out there under the yard light in front of the club. I don't know if they'd hunted the late round or whatever, but Bone got in his truck and left. And they said, where's Ronnie going? They said, well, he's going to train that dog. He's going to hunt till daylight, you know. And he was a hunter, you know. I don't
he
know
was.
How much.
He was, and a handler, too.
Oh,
a hunter
and
a handler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've judged Ronnie. He was a good man to judge in the woods. I had no complaints.
And when he was beat, he was done, too. I drew him several times. He beat me, and I beat him. But when he was done, you didn't have to worry about him causing you any problems. He was out.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the great handlers and, that the sport has had over the years. And
Steve, the biggest problem with most of these guys, they don't know math. They don't know when to beat and when to get out of the way of somebody. And that's the biggest sportsmanship thing you can do for a man. If you are beat and you don't have enough time to beat that guy, get out of his way.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Let his dog rest.
Sure, absolutely. If the numbers won't come together, and there's no possible way, you're, as you said, you're just in somebody's way, and
here's the problem now that we have, far as what Chuck was talking about, not having enough hunting territory. Years ago, deer hunting, all the farmers would let you deer hunt. They wanted you to kill them anyhow. Now the places are all leased and stuff, and it's harder than heck to find a bunch of places. They don't want you in there. And most of these guys, even some of them that's doing, Ward was up my house. Michael Ward brought me a pup up here, and I appreciate him bringing the pup up. It didn't work out, but anyhow, I was asking or telling him, I said, if you would ask some of them guys, when's the last time you went out there and got that dog out of the kennel and took it hunting by yourself? You'd be shocked at the ones that couldn't even remember the last time they went coon hunting by themselves. And it's the truth.
Yeah. That's,
you know, they go out here and they got to have five or six guys to go hunting with them, light shining everywhere. And I hunt by myself a lot and to keep from causing any conflict with any farmers or anybody or somebody seeing a light. You know, I might turn it on four times before I get to the tree to shine the tree. If I'm walking a field, I don't shine that field all the way down through there. But nowadays, a lot of them do that, and they run a lot of places that give coon hunters a bad name.
That's very well put, Don, and that's the way I hunt. You know, when I was in Michigan, I hunted most of the time by myself. And I always seemed like I had a young dog I was fooling with or something. But I, you know, I always kept that. I'm sure that there were farmers in some of the areas that I hunted a lot that didn't know there was a coon hunter in the country.
That's right.
Right, you bet.
You can't get mad at something you don't know about.
That's right. That is exactly right. Well, let's, okay, going back, I don't want to leave him. What were some of the wins that Loomis did or some of his pups did?
Well, I won the second in the PCA Nationals with him. I got him in the finals of several, they called them PCA Tour hunts.
Yep. Those 16 dog hunts, weren't they?
No, they were bigger than that. Oh, okay. It was kind of like a pro hunt, like the old pro hunts.
That's back in the days when Farrell Fields was the judge.
Yes, Farrell Fields judged me. Judged me several times.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And a good judge, him, and I'll tell you, I'll name you some good judges. Farrell Fields, help me with this, Calvin Hayes.
Yeah. Roy
Ed
Tramble.
Ed Bates never judged me, but I know he was a great judge because he's judged some of my friends. But Calvin was good. Farrell Fields was good. There was a fellow named Joe Lewis that was a real good judge. He had red bones.
Okay, Joe is still. I run into him at White River every year. He's a retired military.
Yes. Me and him. It seemed like when you hunted them old tour hunts, you went dead away from the truck for the whole 2 hours. Mm-hmm. The first round was 3 hours, and you had to get back to hunt again 2 hours. And me and him waded sloughs up to our chest, getting me back in time, and he was just right there. I was young, and he was right. He's older than me.
Oh, yeah, Joe's.
He was right side by side with me, getting back to the truck to get me back to hunt again.
How about that? Yeah, he's a great guy. Great, great fella. Well, that's great. Well, if we jump ahead here a little bit, and one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you guys, and don't let me forget this before we go, I want to talk to you about this Homer dog. He's been in the news here lately, and I know you boys trained that dog and sold him, I believe.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about him, but Don, I want just in case my listeners have been under a rock or something for the last few years, and good grief, it's looking like 20 years ago that you won the AKC World Hunt with the little dog called Buck Creek Mr. Smith, and that was at Chillicothe. When that little dog put on an absolute coon tree and clean. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it.
You had Roger Williamson from Michigan with the Brandy female, I believe, was in that cast. Was she? Who else was in that cast? I don't remember. Do you?
Oh, Lord. Boy, my memory.
Well, the Patch
female. Was in there then.
And a bitch called Pork Chop.
All
right. That's right. That's right.
I think he was from Michigan.
And he had bought that pup off of me. Well, he didn't buy it off of me. He had somebody buy it. And he hadn't hunted his first Super Stakes yet. And he won that world hunt. He was 13 months old.
Yeah. Amazing. That was 2005. And then, well, I went to work at AKC in 2004, in November, but the world hunt and all that stuff, I guess, had already been held by then. So really, Don, you won the first one that I had anything to do with AKC. But then we went down to Newberry, South Carolina to an entirely different type of hunting and so forth, and you won it again. Do you remember much about that?
Well, I remember quite a bit about it. The dog really looked good. I in the finals, that Peach female of Billy Bell, mm-hmm. she was in there.
And I had, you know, several
Carolina dogs Peach. She was a little mate to the Willie dog that
Peanut Scott.
Peanut Scott. Thank you, Chuck. Boy, the old memory. But yeah.
I seen that boy. I don't know him. That what's his name? Gentry, the one that has Homer.
Yeah.
I seen him when he won that truck get all upset, and boy, it does. It tears you up, especially like they asked me when the hunt was over and I won it, if I wanted to cut out closer to get the truck to drive around to get the others. And I had my Garmin set. I said, no, I'm going to walk. And I walked there and I'd really done a bunch of talking to that dog. You know, it'll get to you. It will.
Well, I remember the emotion that you had that night, Don. And most people, you know, wait a lifetime and never win a world championship.
And I haven't. I've tried a lot harder than the rest of them. I've never won one, and I've come close, but yeah. I haven't won one.
It's an achievement. And you know, to the credit of if anybody – tries to throw any shade on the fact that you won the AKC World Hunt instead of the UKC or PKC. There's two of the most prolific stud dogs, most popular stud dogs in the world in recent times, won the AKC World Hunt, the Frogger Dog and the Willie Dog.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's fast company. You know, that we put a lot, people don't realize this, Don and Chuck and Colton. We put a lot of sweat and blood into that AKC program to try to make it what we thought it would could be the best that it could be, you know. And right. I had some guys working with me that were just absolutely top drawer.
Jerry Maul. I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah. Well, and we really tried, and it all boiled down to registrations. You know, the Coon Hunters had the UKC and the PKC already, and they really didn't need a third registry to keep their records. And they did not register their dogs in a great enough supply, you know, to justify the money we were spending. And we were spending a lot of money. But anyway, I just want you to be, if you're not, I believe you are, be very, very proud of winning that AKC World Championship, not just once, but twice.
Yeah.
And then he won the UKC World Hunt.
Yeah. Tell me about that now.
Oh, that was a dog called Mr. Clean, and he was a real outfit.
Yeah. And you handled him, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, I don't know what I was doing at that time. I retired at AKC, so I imagine that. What year was that, Don?
That was in 2010.
Okay. Well, that wasn't very long after. Took a couple years, yeah. Okay, well, all right. Who's going to tell me about this? I gotta make this transition from these English dogs, and then you were handling the dog for Larry Weaver, Don, when you won those world championships.
Right.
But now you guys went all out Buck Creek.
Right.
And when did that transformation and that commitment and all that, when did that come?
When I hunted with a dog called Buck Creek, a Buckshot.
Okay.
I'd hunted with Drum before, and I like Drum. I seen Drum look good. I put Drum out of the PCA Nationals in 1982, and we didn't have no great hunt down there, but my dog done enough to win.
That was Charlie Butler's dog, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Kenny Burris was hunting him at Darby Della High, and I judged him. And I liked him there a lot better than I did down in Kentucky because we run a bunch of junk, and my dog was involved on it too. Wasn't just Drum. But later on, I hunted with a dog called Buck Creek Buckshot that it really impressed me. And when I seen how he operated, I thought, I got to have me some of that. And that's how I started with him. I got a red hot eye knot.
Al Nunneman.
Al got her through me. Through me. My mother lost a leg, and I couldn't hunt her in the Super Stakes. And I knew Al, and I told Weaver, I said, "There's a good man to hunt that dog for you," and he did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, okay. Being a dog man, I tend to look at things. I can kind of look at a walker dog and tell what his bloodline is just by looking at him. Now, these Buck Creek dogs got a distinctive look to them, their head, their color, and so forth. Where'd that come from?
Well, you know? I would say back, I'm not sure if Lee Kearns had anything.
Well, Lee hunted with a lot of those dogs back in the day when they were developed.
Kentucky River Rock and Kentucky River Route started those dogs. And
that was that Kreider, Herman Kreider, I think, had something to do with those dogs back then. What was that one dog? I was thinking earlier today, everybody talked about what a tree dog he was way back there, that's in the pedigree of those Buck Creek dogs. And it was the Kentucky River Rock dog was certainly one of them, but there was one more famous than that, and the name won't come to me.
And I can't come with it either.
I can come with one of them, and that was Buck Creek Bandit at Chicana. That was a one of the best.
Bandit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. He was built like a dinosaur, and you on a hot track. He would just leave dogs in the dust, and a tree dog. Larry Whittington hunted him.
I remember Larry. I remember Larry. Yeah, for sure. Well, so the first one you got was this dog that you like so well then, Chuck?
I not.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I named her I not because of Colton. I'd say, "Don't do that, Colton." And he'd say, "I not, Daddy, I not."
He's telling on you, isn't he, Colton?
Oh, yeah.
All right, I'm going to jump in here real quick. Got to ask you, who gave you the name Coon Man?
It's something I picked up in high school. I had a really good lady that lived in the – or worked – not lived, worked in the administration at the high school I went. Her husband was actually involved at one of the local clubs, and I'd won the youth PKC Youth World Championship, and I'd won the CHKC state championship, and I'd done a lot of winning through high school, and she always kept up with it. She kept my name. She put me in the yearbook and the newsletter, and everybody just kind of known me as the Coon Hunter, and they just dubbed me the name Coon Man.
That is great. You know, I have to confess, I doubt there's anybody in my high school knew I was a coon hunter. There weren't any. There weren't any kids, you know. Now, our country down there was full of coon hunters. I mean, there was one behind every tree. But their kids weren't getting involved in it, you know. And, of course, I hunted with my dad on weekends. And rather than to try to explain it to them, I just didn't talk about it, you know.
Right.
But good
right.
for you. Good for you. That's really cool. Well, okay, so...
Here's one thing I want to add on there too. Before it's all said and done, Colton Coon Man Dunlap will win more than me and Chuck put together if he lives a long life, and I'm sure God will let him live a long life because he's a good young man.
Yeah. Well, all reports from all directions agree with what you're saying, Don. And I'm just so privileged to be able to talk to you fellas, and I don't think I've actually been in the woods with any of you, but it's probably too late because the old legs are just about giving out.
How long did it take to get down there to where you're at?
How long? You going to send him down or you going to bring him?
We're getting ready to pull out.
All right.
We'll head down there to you.
I tell you what, now it is, the weather's pretty good right now. You know, we have good weather in Florida for coon hunting in the winter. But, Don, what you were talking about earlier is our problem down here. Everything's tied up in deer leases.
Right.
Now, they do let you run deer with dogs down here.
Right.
But even they won't support the coon hunters, and that's the craziest thing.
That's a shame.
It is. All houndsmen ought to be able to support each other. All right. Now, you got to
– I want to say something, yeah. Steve. I want to say something.
Absolutely.
One of my proudest moments with Colton was the PKC got a hold of him to talk to the youth last year down there. And the talk that he gave, it's on, I think Michaelis recorded it.
Okay.
And you can look it up.
I will.
It was really worth listening to because he didn't talk as much about winning as he did how you're supposed to be and the Lord. And I really was proud to death over how he handled himself down there and talked to those children.
Well, Colton, that's not an easy job. They asked me to do that a few years ago. Jarvis was still living. And I went to Salem, and I did. I spoke to the youth there at their dinner and all. And Amy Thomas was there, at Kovac Thomas, and she said, "I believe you're nervous, aren't you?" She says, "I've never seen you nervous to talk to people." I said, "You don't understand who I'm talking to. You know, I'm talking to the future of our sport here."
Amen.
You know, and I want to be very, very careful what I say that will do nothing but to encourage these young people. So hats off to you, Colton. That's great. I would definitely go and listen to that.
You listen to that, and you'll be proud of him, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I already am. You boys, you got West Virginia roots and you're good people. And that's what I've tried to keep within arm's reach of good people all through the years. And all right, now, Croson. Tell me about Croson. He's your stud dog. He's your dog. Yeah. Did you name him after Ryan Croson?
Yes, I did. We've named a lot of dogs after people.
Yeah.
Ryan was up here staying, working, and he hunted with me. He was at my house every night, and we hunted together. And when that pup come along, that's what I named him, was Croson. But I thought that he would catch on, which I've sold some pups out of him for good fees, good money. But I thought people would breed to him more than he did, or I'd have kept him and hunted him in the hunts more. I took him out of the hunts and started breeding him because I seen what he throw.
Yeah.
If anybody's ever hunted with Homer, you was wanting to talk about him.
Yeah, I absolutely do.
I started that pup, and he developed, and Colton, he said, he liked him, and I said, "Well, I'll just give you half of him." Well, he was working, and he gave him back to me. Within a couple of weeks went by, "Dad, I want to buy that dog off." Well, I said, "Now, I'll just give you half of him." I said, "Now, you're going to pay for him now." I sold it to him, $35,000 or $3,000, yeah. But I never thought I'd sell my son something for that much money because but I done give him half of it.
Colton, did he give you the speech that if you pay for it, you'll appreciate it more?
No, I wanted him to have half of it.
Well, Steve, I'll tell you what the situation was. Right out of high school, I graduated on a Friday, and then on Monday, I was working for a pipeline outfit. And I went to work. I always stayed hunting, but it was weighing on me terrible that me and Dad owned that pup together. And Dad's hunting, you know, 6-7 nights a week, and I'm only going 4. And
holding up your end of the bargain.
Yeah, and then I said, "Hey, that ain't right." And then I thought, well, I'd feel okay about it if I'd give him some money, you know, just take the dog off his hands. I just do what I can.
Well, that's a switch a kid giving the parents money. That don't usually work that way, does it? Yeah. How old are you, Colton?
I'm 26.
Oh, boy. Love to roll back the clock to those years, wouldn't we all?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's talk about Homer. What's he out of? I know he's out of Grossen. Yeah.
Yeah, he was very natural when he started. Very, very wild. Very, very junky is what his when I'm talking about it. All 4 and 5 months old, he'd run and you'd have to go in there and go after him. I remember we came back from a hunt and it was in the wee hours of the morning. And Dad said, let's go across there and, you know, cut that pup. We had a feeder over there. We'll cut that pup on that feeder. I think I got him rounded up at 8:30 in the morning. It was well daylight and I had to round him up. So he was very hardcore. But set into training him, you know, rewarding him with coons and stuff like that. And he'd still bump a little off game if coons weren't running, but nothing like he was when he was a pup. Mm-hmm. And was made a very focused, fast, quick, good coon dog.
He was fast as any dog you ever seen getting from A to B, you know, getting a coon treed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this game has always been built on speed, you know.
You bet.
Yeah. So is he the type of dog that wins today regularly? I mean, he hunts hard and wide and usually has a coon and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in his from talking to Austin and his older age, I think he will tree a coon in between how am I trying to say this? He might treat two where he may have only treated one, mm-hmm. talking about distance wise, you know. Yeah. He'll pop that coon close and then dive in there. But whenever I hunted him, he'd get deep pretty much right off the bat.
He done some nonsensical stuff, you know, that he shouldn't have been doing.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a teenage kid, doesn't it? I mean, we all did some stupid stuff that we shouldn't have done. But, you know, I think what you're talking about there is about him picking up that extra coon in between. You know, that just comes with age and with experience. And he's thinking more over his head than he is out there in front of him. You know, maybe.
Right. And he's been pretty hard on his body. His old body can't take them long jumps in there. He figures I'll eat right here instead of eat way down the road. You know what I mean?
How old is he now?
He'll be 6 this New Year. He's born on New Year's.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, so Chuck, you said now you probably haven't bred as many as you'd hope, and I can understand that. You know,
he's got 178 pups is all he's got, and he's kept me in a coon dog. He's kept me in a coon dog, and Lord, I've sold some.
We've all sold some young dogs for big money out of him. I sold Rodney a good bitch, just a year old before.
She was a gold champion.
Yeah, I made her a gold champion before she was a year old.
Yeah, well, we're experiencing a little of that with the dog that we've got. You know, he just turned 4, but he was a night champion at 13 months old, and he's a quad grand and 2 in every category. You'd think the plot people would be just and that's all window dressing. He's producing. His puppies are doing really, really good. Just had one finish the night champion at 15 months old here the other night.
Wow.
They don't breed to him much. You know, they plot people breed in their backyard, you know.
Right.
And for a breeder that's got a good dog like Croson that's producing, there's a little bit of frustration there. At least it is for me.
You know, it hasn't frustrated me at all. It's kept me in dogs, and I don't have to hunt against them.
Right. That's a good
point, Chuck.
He's earned his right to live and eat and be took care of till the day he dies here. And he's 9 years old now. And
we'll get some pups out of him ourselves here before long.
Yeah. I get them, and then I end up selling them. We just sold a 11-month-old one to Clifford Rivers and a guy named David Lambert out of Alabama, and he's everything you would want in a young pup.
Yeah, he's I don't know if you – he's the one I won the baby stakes with here, just the fall baby stakes with. I call him Hustler.
I'm getting a call come in here just a second.
Oh.
I got rid of it. You guys still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and how old is he now?
He just turned a year old.
Are you talking about Crow? Or are you talking about
the puppy that won the baby stakes?
Oh, you know. He just turned a year old.
Yeah. I got you. Well, do you fellas study breeding any to the degree you like to fan? What do you think about family breeding or breeding?
I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't like close in breeding, but I think if you've got a real hound, that's what I did with Loomis. I put him strategically in that pedigree as line breeding him, not in breeding. I've never made no cross to brother, sister, or mother to father, or son to daughter, or son to father, or daughter to mother.
Right.
I never done any of that. But line breeding, I have.
Yeah. Well, I was always a proponent of that. We did it in our own dogs. My dad was a bear hunter, and that's what he bred for, you know, was bear dogs. But I always liked those uncle niece crosses and things like that. And when I was at UKC, I found out that we had a discrepancy in what we were calling inbred. You know, we were actually, by UKC's interpretation now, the only inbred animals are like a father-daughter, mother-son cross, or full brother and sister.
That's where I got screwed up just a minute ago. mother and son and father and daughter, I don't.
Yeah, that's as much inbreeding as you can get. You know, when you do that, you're inbreeding as much as you can. We found, and there's a fellow, I've quoted him on this podcast several times. He was has a couple degrees in animal science and all down in Virginia. He was a bear hunter and coon hunter, Lance Hutton. And he always said, you know, you family breed to establish your line, and you outcross to get your outstanding individuals. And if you can outcross to another family of dogs, then that's the icing on the cake.
They're line bred.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that and all. How old is Croson now?
9.
Okay. Well, have you collected him?
You know, I started to, but I thought about it and I thought, you know, he's a good enough reproducer that he's going to leave me with a dog.
Okay.
And I'll just go on with that dog.
And his sperm count's good. He's had him checked. So there ain't no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a dilemma that a breeder has, you know, a hunter has. If you've got a pathway there that you can keep that blood going, you need to do it, boys. You know, one way.
Yeah. I will not. I got a little pup out there right now. I call McConnell. That he 4.5 months old, and I know Popeye is a sissy if he don't make a coon dog.
Are you even old enough to know who Popeye is, Colton?
I am.
I know who Popeye is,
Steve. hey, Steve, this is Dawn. My wife's giving me the crazy eye over here. She's got a Zoom meeting over there in the house she's got to do.
All right.
So I live about 15 minutes from here. I'm going to take off. It was good talking to you.
Don, wonderful to talk to you too, buddy. Congratulations again on all your achievements with the World Hunts and all, and just hope you can enjoy this sport as long as I have, or longer. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, and I'll talk to you later. I'll see you guys.
See you, buddy. Love you.
Okay, that's Don Dunlap.
Yeah, you still got two of us.
I still got father and son. Now we can talk about Don. No, it's so cool to be able to talk to you guys because, well, a lot of reasons. You're from West Virginia originally. At least your roots are, Colton. I'm sure you were born in Ohio, but
I was raised in West Virginia, Steve, and I'm proud of that too. You know, I was raised by a West Virginian, and I've took after him, and I'm proud of it.
Well, we are proud Mountaineers. Our state motto is Montana Semper Liberi, Mountaineers always free. And there is a freedom that comes, you know, from growing up in that rugged country and all. It's just it is God's country in a lot of ways. Well, my old voice is just about give out on me here, fellas. Is there any?
I think we've had a great talk.
Well, I have enjoyed it to the max, as they say. I just don't know why I haven't called you fellas before, but I did listen to a couple of your podcasts before, and they've always been interesting. And do you have you got a dog right now, Colton, that you're real proud of that you're going to hit the hunt hard this spring with, or what?
Well, me and we sold Clifford, the fella that's in partnership that bought Hustler. We sold him a dog before, and he's had a lot of success with her. And he's actually me and him's worked out a deal where I'm going to hold on to Hustler until either the PKC World Hunt or some hunt in the spring, and then really it'll just be kind of starting over with this McConnell pup. And I've kind of always done that. I enjoy it. I enjoy fooling with the young dogs, but I compete them when I can. But that'll probably be my next big hunt, as I'll compete Hustler this spring in the PKC World Hunt.
That sounds great. Chuck, do you still try to night hunt any?
I can go about an hour in a night hunt, maybe. And that's it. I got bad knees.
Yeah.
And I had one replaced. I hope to get back to where I can hunt in them, but I don't look. The way I used to be the fastest in the cast.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the slowest.
Well, I was that way. I used to laugh walking back to the truck, you know, up in those PKC hunts in Michigan, and I'd have them strung out behind me like streetlights, you know.
Hey, and I love that.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
And I'd laugh under my breath, and I think I'm getting paid back for
it. that's what my dad told me, you know. He said, "You slow down, Steve. You walk too fast." I said, "These paybacks are tough, aren't they, Dad?" Because I guess he was like with me, like your dad was with you, Colton. He walked me to death in the mountains. Well, I got one question I want to ask you about Croson. Now, I know he produces good dogs. Does he produce dogs that are like him, or is he just producing good dogs?
No, he produces his likeness. It's not just what he's off of. It goes back three or four generations. I hunted Preacher. Preacher is his gray at sea. He's off of Johnny B. Good, and Johnny B. Good was off of my Jackson dog. I called him Doug Jackson.
Doug Jackson, I remember that.
Doug Jackson was off of Smith and a Buck Creek Banded female. So he's got a top and bottom. And on his bottom side, his mother was off of a dog called Buck Creek Clifford that was a nice dog. I mean, he's just loaded with the same type of hard hunting, tracking, and when they tree, they got a coon.
Yeah.
If I was going to say anything weak about him, he don't throw a Smith was probably the best layup dog that the Buck Creek dogs ever had. And I don't think he inherited that from the Buck Creek dogs. I think he inherited that from his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not in those dogs. They're morely hit a track even a rough track and get it up and get it moving and get it tree.
Right,
but
yeah.
to say that he's a good layup dog, and a lot of people will criticize some of the mouths they have. They were a lot like I told you about Loomis, a high Pearson type mm-hmm. mouth.
Yeah.
You can hear crows in 2 miles.
Yeah.
But he don't have the big hound mouths.
Well, it's hard to get every little thing in the package.
Oh, my, there's so many things that you'd have to breed for and get it. You just got to take the best of what they have to offer, you know.
Yeah.
And you have to, just like a tree dog. I like a dog not to move on a tree. I like it to stand on that tree
mm-hmm.
and put everything into their bark. But I'm not going to call one just because they go up and down a little bit on a tree if they're a good coon dog.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you kind of got to pick your battles, you know.
There's things that I have my druthers that I like, mm-hmm. but you can't just go overboard.
Yeah.
And if you go to mouse and just, I want this dog to have a good mouth, you can leave out a lot of things. You know, the evidence is what's the most important thing, having that evidence up that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And mouse great. And as long as I can hear them and pick them out a long ways off, I'm satisfied with that. Now, everybody's not that way. I understand that.
Well, we are all different, but it's very wise.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Bible talks about treasures in earthen vessels. Colton, because of my work and with the kennel clubs and all that, I didn't get to continue on the work that my dad did in breeding his dogs. And I always regret that. Now, I've got dogs with that same kennel name, but they're not the same line of dogs. And I hope, and I think that you will, that you'll be able someday, you know, God forbid, you know, you're going to anything happening to you, you're going to outlive your dad. And you're going to be the one that decides whether or not to continue on. And I think you got a great tradition here, not only your family, but in these dogs. And believe me, you know, they got a good rep out there across the coon hunting world. The people respect these Buck Creek dogs, you know.
I sure appreciate it, Steve. And I really want to say I've been blessed. I could end it there. I've been blessed. I've got a – what's that, Steve?
No, you go ahead. I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been blessed. I've got a mother and father that have always put me first. I've got a sister that I love. Not only I love like a sister, but my best friend. I've got a wife that I know that my mother – prayed long hours in the night for me to meet, and I've got a beautiful, beautiful blessing of a daughter.
Oh,
and
awesome.
And you know, this coon hunting, I love it, I do. But I love getting the win. I love seeing a young dog tree its first coon. It's probably some of the things before the lights go out for me that I'll think on. But the greatest thing that this coon hunting's brought for me is the relationship that I've built with my father, and it means more to me than anything I could win or anything. And it'll be tough. I can't even hardly talk about it, Steve. But it'll be tough when he goes on to keep going. But I hope I can make him proud. You know.
Oh well, yeah. I, how about this? Is he making you proud, Chuck?
He bet he is. Giving his sister the best things I ever done in my life.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is what I set out to achieve with these podcasts, is bring good people to the microphone that have good stories to share, but most of all that they're good people, you know. And I am so thankful to be able to call you guys friends. I've met people all over the dog world for many, many years, you know, and I really do love and respect you guys for what you've done and the family aspect of everything and all was just awesome. So I just want to thank you. Have I left out anything that you thought we should have talked about tonight?
No, Steve.
Look, buddy, we can do it again.
Well, let's do. Absolutely. There's no reason. There's going to be lots of stories.
You can't get a whole lifetime in an hour.
No, not at all. And, boy, this, as we're recording this, it's on Friday evening. Next Thursday will be Thanksgiving. Now, this podcast will not air until the Monday following Thanksgiving. And by the schedule of things, the way we have to get them in and so forth.
So
it'll be a belated Thanksgiving wish to you guys and to the Dunlap family. But I just wish you a great family time and much continued success with those Buck Creek Dogs.
Hey, and you have a good Thanksgiving, and if you ever get up this way, we'll carry you coon hunting.
Well, I'd love to go. If you got a side by side, I could park its old carcass in, or a four wheeler.
Buddy, I got a Tacoma that I'll drive. Like
oh,
a side
there you
side
go. I like that. As the old boy said, more better. Well, Chuck and Colton, and we said goodbye there to Don earlier. It's been a real joy to have you on the Gone to the Dogs podcast, and we'll certainly look forward to the opportunity to talk with you fellows again. Have a great holiday season, and maybe I'll see you at one of the hunts in the spring. I hope so.
Yeah. You bet, Steve. Thank
okay,
you.
Well, you guys take care, and I'll let you go.
All right. See you, Steve.
See you.
Uh-huh. What a great interview with Chuck, Don, and Colton, Coonman Dunlap. Those guys are just awesome, and I'm just so thankful to be able to have the opportunity to talk to them here on the Gone to the Dogs podcast. I will say that I want to thank Buddy Woodbury and the good folks at W Hunting Supply for the continued support that allows this podcast to stay on the air, as we say. And for those of you who are listening for the first time, we hope you'll come back and be with us. We produce a podcast each week. They drop on Monday mornings, usually about 5 a.m. for those of you who are going to work early. But this is the old coon hunter, Steve Fielder, saying, if you wonder where I am, you're pretty safe in betting that I'm gone to the dogs.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross-Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Don't chew on that, Max.
Cooper loves that chew, too.
Oh, now he's into Cooper's food. Wow, he is loving it. What do you feed Cooper?
Blue Buffalo Life Protection Formula. He never leaves a crumb. I love it because it's made with high-quality protein, nutrient-rich fruits and veggies, and wholesome whole grains.
Looks like we're switching to Blue.
Blue Buffalo foods are made with the superior ingredients your dog needs to thrive. Can your dog food say that? Visit feedbluefood.com to learn more.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.